Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekender Edition, published Saturday, December 10th, 2022. Front page. Midland might get family center, cinema, and entertainment development to be at highways 191 and 158, where Costco had planned a store. By Mella McEwen. Midland may have lost out on a Costco, but it could be gaining a new entertainment center at the site. Midland Development Corporation on Friday unveiled a proposed entertainment center to be located on 17.2 acres at Sinclair Avenue and what will become Kirkland Drive, where Costco planned to build its store before canceling the project. MDC board members will vote Monday at their board meeting to execute a letter of intent between the MDC, City of Midland, and Hodges Development Services to develop the project. The project will consist of a lot for 60,000 square foot family cinema and entertainment center, complete with an outdoor music and event stage, a lot to be occupied by a nationally recognized retailer and comprised of about 60,000 square feet, and platted lots for other general retailers and restaurants. Non-disclosure agreements prevent the disclosure of the specific names involved in the development. Sarah Harris, MDC Executive Director, stressed to the Reporter Telegram that the letter of intent is non-binding and that the full agreement will be presented to the MDC board and city council multiple times before it is finalized. It calls for construction of the development to begin by September 1st of next year, with completion no later than January 1st, 2027. We believe this is the opening of a conversation where the public is invited to understand the project and express their opinions and concerns. Hodges will invest $45 million in the project, and MDC is being asked to contribute $5 million to fund the roads and other infrastructure. Harris said those new roads will become city roads once complete. The letter of intent also includes city property tax abatements over a period of 10 years, dropping from 100% the first 2 years to 20% the final 2 years. It also includes a city sales tax rebate of 50% generated by the cinema and entertainment center and the retailer, as well as the general retailers and restaurants, for the first 7 years they're open to the public. The city council is very careful with its incentives, Mayor-elect Lori Blong told the Reporter Telegram. We believe this will be a beneficial project with huge benefits in terms of job creation, long-term development of that area, and to the people of Midland. What makes the project so compelling is the quick timeline for construction and Hodges' record of success, said Harris. Blong said the proposed project is a demonstration of the hard work from the MDC staff and City of Midland staff to bring more family-friendly event space. They've worked hard, and I'm pleased to see it move forward. New MISD leader to tackle struggles. Howard says academic improvement requires having quality teachers, by Stuart Doreen. Stephanie Howard appreciates where MISD is going. She worked at Ector County ISD, which had many of the same issues with academic performance and multiple failing campuses. She worked at Crane ISD, which was a D-rated campus before her arrival. Howard was actually a Midland ISD employee in the early 2000s, which by comparison to the last 10 to 15 years was a golden age for learning in Midland. At the time, Midland was ranked as high as a recognized district, which was the best rating prior to this past year when Midland ISD received a district grade of B, just like Crane ISD. If we're not about two steps ahead, we're falling behind, Howard said about the academic struggles that, for more than a decade, have plagued Midland ISD, Ector County ISD, and much of Region 18, one of the worst-performing academic regions in the state. We kind of take our eye off the target for a little while, and before we know it, there are some problems that we really have to address. Academic rebound starts with teachers. Howard points to teacher shortages for the struggles that happened in Midland and around the region. Howard is a veteran of Midland, Odessa, Stanton, Big Spring, and Crane, among other areas, and understands the cyclical economies and the inability to keep quality teachers. Those are not new, Howard said. We've dealt with those for 15 years. Teacher shortages mean more students are packed into fewer classrooms, which she said exacerbates the struggles taking place. She said Midland ISD will be creative with recruiting, retention, and utilizing our team. Teacher quality is critical, Howard said. Contrary to what some people believe, not everyone can be a teacher, and you can't just put someone in the room and expect kids to learn how to read and be successful. And so, you'll hear me talk a lot about our profession, and I love this profession, and we have to value our teachers. We have to appreciate them. Change in air? Murray said taking care of teachers means more than a starting salary that is closing in on $60,000 and paying for insurance. The husband of a Faskin Elementary teacher said he expects Howard to place an even greater emphasis on teacher development and gathering input from teachers on things like the school calendar and where to place teacher development days. Murray knows the state will be moving the bar in how it rates schools and districts this year. A district looking to maintain certain levels it achieved in 2021-22 will be difficult, he said. He said Howard can use the systems we have in place and push forward, but he also expects changes. Could this mean possible changes to intercession? Murray was asked. Yes, I believe so, he said. I think you're going to see some changes beginning January 3rd, which is tentatively Howard's first day at Midland ISD, Murray added. She is very much an academic leader. Curriculum is where she strives, and so I think we will see that. Living Nativity returns. First Baptist Church of Midland members want you to get out of your car and experience the Nativity scene, from staff reports. Living Nativity at First Baptist Church of Midland will return for 3 nights, Tuesday through Thursday, at the corner of N Street and Cuthbert Avenue. The event, according to First Baptist officials, is not a drive-by, but a get-out-of-your-car and experience the Nativity scene. There is plenty of parking across the street in the church parking lot. First Baptist Church's Christmas card to the community celebrating the birth of Jesus will take place from 7 to 8 p.m. each day. Hot chocolate will be served, and in addition to Christmas music playing while enjoying the Nativity scene, something new has been added, a recording of the Christmas story from the Gospel of Luke in both English and Spanish. There are 3 casts, one for each night, consisting of Mary, Joseph, baby Jesus, angels, shepherds, wise men, and animals. There are approximately 18 cast members each night, numerous volunteers behind the scenes assisting with costumes and makeup for each character, Sunday school classes providing a light meal for the cast, men who assist with building the stable, and men who arrange to have the animals at the nativity, First Baptist reported. From the Inside Pages. Craddock files bill to create workplace violence hotline, from staff reports. State Representative Tom Craddock on Friday filed House Bill 915, the first of its kind, to create a workforce violence hotline in memory of 19-year-old Veronica Sanchez, who was killed in a workplace incident in February. Veronica's hotline will provide all Texans a safe hotline to call if they ever feel they are in danger in the workplace, said Craddock in the new release. We cannot undo the tragedy that has befallen the Sanchez family and our community. However, we can create resources to help those who feel as though they are in danger in the workplace. The Veronica's hotline number will be provided to all employers in Texas with instructions on how to use the number for all employees. A call to Veronica's hotline will be routed directly back to the local authorities for proper response. This can include an in-depth investigation of the reported situation and a response to remove the threat of violence in the workplace. The Texas legislative session begins on January 10th. Midland Urban Air Owner Earns Franchise Honor by Ben Schaefer. With the acquirement of Urban Air and XP League, Midland's Giammari Soto became Unleashed Brands' first tri-brand owner within the platform, the company released Thursday. Unleashed Brands is a youth enrichment franchise platform company based in the Metroplex city of Bedford. That includes brands like Urban Air Adventure Park, Snapology, the Little League or the Little Gym XP Gaming League, Class 101, and Premier Martial Arts. Soto began her relationship with Unleashed Brands as the Little Gym franchisee. In November 2021, she signed with Urban Air Adventure Park. Lastly, she will operate the XP League, which will be open in late December inside Urban Air, as the press release stated. According to Unleashed Brands, in addition to operating franchises in Midland, Soto plans to bring the Little Gym to Odessa in the future. These businesses grow with your children, Soto said. Families can start with one and expand into the others, making sure their kids are learning and stimulated no matter what interest they have. I love being at the heart of something that I see developing so successfully in this area. Josh Wall, Chief Growth Officer of Unleashed Brands, shared his excitement about working with Soto in the release. Partnering with entrepreneurs like Giammari Ree, who understand our mission to help kids learn, play, grow through play ownership of our youth enrichment franchise brands, is at the core of Unleashed Brands. We are proud that our existing franchisees who are choosing to diversify their portfolios with Unleashed Brands, he said. City officials report Dallas man involved in fatal crash on State Highway 191 from staff reports. Carlos Reyes, 35, from Dallas, was killed in a single vehicle rollover accident Thursday morning on State Highway 191, according to the City of Midland. The white 2004 Dodge Ram 1500 was traveling eastbound on 191 in the inside lane when it entered a side skid, crossed the outside lane into the center median, and rolled, according to the city. Reyes, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was ejected and pronounced deceased at the scene. Speed and impairment are believed to be contributing factors to the crash, according to the city. Bears take 11% bite out of oil prices Friday, by Mella McEwen. Bears roamed amid crude markets this week, sending oil prices to their lowest level of the year. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange fell all five trading days this week, ending the week with an 11% plunge, the biggest weekly loss since April. WTI began the week sinking $3.05 per barrel, followed by back-to-back drops in excess of $2 before declines gradually eased. WTI fell 44 cents Friday to close the week at $71.02, down from $79.98 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended at $67.50, according to Plains All American. Natural gas on the NYMEX began the week, dropping 70 cents to $5.57 per MCF, an additional 11 cents Tuesday, before rebounding the final 3 weeks of the week. Natural gas at the Henry Hub rose 28 cents Friday to close at $6.245 per MCF. A lot of the activity is financial. Ken Medlock III, James A. Baker III, and Susan G. Baker, Fellow in Energy and Resource Economics and Senior Director, Center for Energy Studies, Baker Institute for Public Policy at Rice University, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. In a week's time, the physical fundamentals don't change that much. When prices whipsaw as they have, it's uncertainty, he said. There has been uncertainty about the planned price cap on Russian oil, but there turns to be little of it, he said, and the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Nations decided to maintain output. U.S. companies don't have the same incentive to drill as much as they have in the past, he added, listing as impediments how expensive capital is. ESG, environmental, social, and governance concerns, and determination by oil companies to return capital to investors rather than grow production. What is driving down prices is economic concerns, he said, something that will weigh down all markets going into 2023 and even throughout next year. It is being seen all around the globe, he added, listing continued soft demand and the continued presence of COVID. As we move through the post-COVID recovery, we'll see real economic weights. We're seeing layoffs increase. The market is still on net adding jobs, but that's masking the fact that people are permanently leaving the market. Consumer debt is also climbing, he said. Uncertainty is, I think, is the thing that I would stress, he concluded. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, the Americas with Oonata, said in his daily e-newsletter, the short-term crude demand outlook has deteriorated significantly as no one has a strong handle on how bad a recession will hit the U.S. economy. China's COVID situation also remains a big concern as the end of its COVID zero strategy could cripple the country's health system. Energy traders are going to trade very technically here and probably look to defend the $70 level for WTI crude. Rig count drops after 6 weeks, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity fell to a 5-month low as the rig count posted its first weekly decline in 6 weeks. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said its weekly U.S. rig count, which it has reported weekly since the 1940s, fell by 4 to 780. The U.S. tally, though, is still 204 rigs higher than the 576 reported last December. The number of rigs seeking crude oil fell by 2 to 625,154, more than the 471 counted a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas also fell by 2 to 153, the lowest since July, but 48 more than the 105 seen last year. Texas saw one rig laid down during the week, bringing the statewide total to 370 rigs, 98 more than the 272 at work last year. New Mexico added 2 rigs for 106 this week. New Mexico was the only producing state to see an increase in rig activity, while Alaska, 2, Oklahoma, 2, and Wyoming, 1, joined Texas as producing states to see a decline. The Permian Basin held steady at 350 rigs this week, 64 more than the 286 drilling across the region the previous December. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian, jumping 4 rigs to 72 this week. Martin and Reeves counties tied for second place with 34 each, unchanged for Martin and down 2 for Reeves. Midland County added a rig for 32 rigs, closely followed by Eddy County, New Mexico, with 31, down 2 for the week. Loving County reported 23 rigs, down 2, and Howard County had 20, up 1. Ward County added 2 rigs this week for 19, while Upton County held steady at 15 rigs. Glasscock County had 14 rigs, down for the week, down 3 for the week. And Verus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm in Verus, said its U.S. rig count reached 877 during the week ended December 7th, 5 rigs higher than in the previous week. The company's rig count is also down 1% in the last month, but up 28% year over year. Weekly gains occurred in 3 major regions, with the Permian Basin adding 4 rigs to 322. The Anadarko Basin added 3 at 91. And the Williston Basin adding 3 to reach 43. The Appalachian and DJ Basins were flat at 56 and 20 rigs. The Gulf Coast lost 2 rigs and now has 119 running. Midland Reporter-Telegram obituaries published Saturday, December 10th, 2022. Betty Jane Rogers Williamson. Betty Jane Rogers was born June 20th, 1932, to David Ellis Rogers and Pearl Wilson Rogers in Village, Arkansas. Her mother died when Betty was 8 years old, and her younger sister, Martha Jean, was 3. Her father never remarried, so Betty and her dad raised Martha. While in high school, Betty met Bob Williamson, and he gave her the nickname Shorty. They were married in Village, Arkansas, September 5th, 1950. Betty is survived by husband Bob, daughter and son-in-law Angela, and John Wolfkill, and son and daughter-in-law Roger and Linda Williamson. She's also survived by granddaughter Crystal Hancock and husband Nathan, grandson James Wolfkill, granddaughter Jenna Bredoff, and husband Phil, and grandson Alex Williamson. Betty was a proud great-grandmother to five great-grandchildren. The family will receive guests from 5 to 6 p.m. Friday, December 9th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 10th at First Christian Church in Midland. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Scottish Rite for Children, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, or the charity of your choice. Betty Luann Garner Bradley. Betty Luann Garner Bradley, 70, of Midland, passed away suddenly at her home Wednesday, December 7th. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, December 12th at Fairview Cemetery. Betty was born April 4th, 1952 in Big Spring, Texas, to Elizabeth and Dan Garner. Betty married Jerry Lee Bradley, December 29th, 1989. They have one daughter, Carianne Bradley. She is survived by her husband, Jerry Lee, and daughter, Carrie Ann. She's also survived by her siblings, David Garner and wife, Cheryl, of Westminster, Colorado. Roger Garner and wife, Joanna, of Lubbock. Kathy Guzman and husband, Tony Hughes, of San Antonio. James Garner and wife, Lily. Joe Garner and wife, Linda. Jane Ann Smith and husband, Michael. And Charles Garner, all of Midland. Also numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. She's preceded in death by her parents and one brother and her in-laws. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be sent to the American Diabetes Association or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Byron Roman. Byron Roman, 62, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, December 6th. Visitation will begin at 12 p.m. until 8 p.m., Sunday, December 11th. Services will be at 3 p.m., Monday, December 12th. Both will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Byron was born on December 7th, 1959, in Guatemala City, Guatemala, to Reginaldo Roman Higueros and Maritza Cardoza Arvelo. On September 16th, 1983, he and Eliana Chavez were married. Together they have two beautiful children, Mildred Maritza, 34 years old, and Byron Raul Jr., 33 years old. The family would like to express profound gratitude to Mario and Karen Ruiz, and to the gracious medical staff at Midland Memorial Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Waylon Livingston, 817-1928 to 1114-2022. Waylon Alton Ben Livingston, 94, of Midland, and frequent visitor to Rockport, Texas, passed away at home on November 14th due to complications from a fractured hip, the result of a fall, on August 29th, 2022. Waylon Ben was born in Roby, Texas, August 17th, 1928. He married Betty Lou Garrett on July 4th, 1952, in Rockport, Texas. They had four children and were married for over 64 years until his dear wife and sweetheart succumbed to Alzheimer's disease and a fractured hip in 2017. Ben is survived by sisters Mary Anderson and Darlene Jones, sons James Livingston, daughters Cheryl Livingston and husband Tom Watkins, Patricia Larson and husband Mark, and Gloria Branch and husband Roger, plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Ben is preceded in death by Betty Lou Livingston, spouse, parents Ernest and Addie Livingston, sisters Rita Krutzinger and Lenora Landrum, and brother D.H. Livingston. The family wishes to express appreciation to staff, nurses, and therapists at Encompass Health Rehab Hospital, Mabee Center at Manor Park, and Jativa Hospice for care they provided. Honoring the wishes of Waylon Ben, there is no memorial service planned at this time. Azarian Zaza Jennings. Azaria Zaza Jennings passed away November 30th, 2022 in Midland. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Friday, December 9th at Goodwell Missionary Baptist Church with Drew Barker officiating. A wake will be held Thursday, December 8th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home in Midland from 6 to 8 p.m. Zaza was born November 5th, 2005 in Midland to Angelie Jennings and Andre Mitchell. He is survived by his parents, Andre Mitchell and Angelie Jennings, brothers DeMonte Collins, Andre Mitchell II, DeAndre Jennings, sisters Timra Jennings, Timra Aisheen Mitchell, Anjaya Sadler, Demonje Sadler, grandmother Tonya Jennings, and nephews Jacob and Cyrus Collins. Funeral directions are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at asanchezfh.com. Death notices from Saturday. Clifford Ashbar. Clifford Ashbaugh, 64, Midland, passed away Monday, December 5th. Services are pending with Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Diego Gabaldon. Baby Diego Alexander Gabaldon, infant, passed away Tuesday, December 6th. Viewing will be Tuesday, December 13th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with the graveside service at 2 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family condolences and messages may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. James Thomas Newton Jr. James Thomas Newton Jr., 75, of Midland, passed away December 6, 2022. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, December 13th at Nellie Pickleham Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, December 14th at Nellie Pickleham Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welch and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Judy Bradley. Judy Bradley, born May 2, 1944, to December 6, 2022. Funeral by Jackie Warren at Midland Church of God on Monday, December 12th at 11 a.m. Graveside is Tuesday at 11 a.m. at Hope Cemetery in Henrietta, Texas. Maria Aguirre de Cruz. Maria Lorenza Aguirre de Cruz passed away Thursday, December 8th. Viewing will be Monday, December 12th from 5 to 9 p.m. with a prayer service at 7 p.m. all at Amistad Christina, 401 South Main Street, with Pastor Sergio Alvarado officiating. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, December 10th. Montessori Mastery adds electives and basketball. Montessori Mastery School of Odessa has added JV and high school basketball, photography, and American Sign Language this year. It's also continuing its popular theater program, taught by Kaylee Cerda, field trips for 4th through 12th grades, and visits from area museums and organizations from the pre-kindergarten through 3rd grade classes. And as with schools statewide, Montessori Mastery is increasing security by installing a key card system. The school currently has 135 students in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade, partly in St. Andrew's Cumberland Presbyterian Church and a portable building where high school math and science is taught. Randy McGuire, who is the school's co-director with his wife Gloria, said they are not connected with the church but are thankful for the space. "We're at the 135. We physically don't have room for any more," McGuire said. The hope has been that philanthropy will come their way to help them implement plans for the future. "We already have plans in mind. What our vision would be if we could have a school built, just so much that we could do, so much more," he said. Photography instructor Beckwith Thompson is teaching photography. She had been an adjunct at Odessa College. "There's a difference between teaching 30 years of studio classes 3 hours a day, twice a week for a set-up group of people that are older. I taught from ages 17 to 70, but having a whole group of teenagers has thrown me for a loop a few times. But the way we've set it at this point, it's pass-fail. So there's no homework, no grading, and that's always nice. But I'm trying to figure out what they want and then how I can do it with them in an hour once a week, as opposed to 3 hours twice a week for 16 weeks," Thompson said. They are using digital cameras. Her husband, Steve Goff, gave a demonstration on SnapSpeed, a photo editing application. McGuire said Thompson reached out to Montessori Mastery about offering photography. "She reached out to me actually pre-COVID, and we were going to get something going and didn't. She was just wanting to get beyond college and, again, get involved with younger students." This is Jane, December 10th, Saturday, reading for the OA. Local news roundup. Midland police issue murder arrest warrant. A capital murder arrest warrant has been issued for a man accused of stabbing a 28-year-old woman to death in Midland. The Midland Police Department received a call about a stabbing from the hometown suites shortly before 5 a.m. Thursday and discovered Mariela Galindo Lozano had been stabbed multiple times and had died. A warrant for Raven Robert Rodriguez has been issued, and anyone with information as to his whereabouts is asked to call MPD at 432-685-7108 or Midland Crime Stoppers at 432-694-8477. Wilson and Young student arrested. ECISD police Thursday afternoon arrested a 13-year-old boy from Wilson and Young Middle School for threatening to get a gun and shoot up the school. He was arrested for the Class A misdemeanor threat or exhibition or use of a firearm on campus or bus, a news release said. He will also face disciplinary action at school. As we have throughout the school year, ECISD leaders continue to remind students about the serious consequences of making a threat like this. We will continue to make safety our top priority and take these situations seriously, the release said. Dallas man dies in single vehicle accident. Carlos Reyes, 35, from Dallas, was killed in a single vehicle rollover accident on State Highway 191 on Thursday at approximately 6:30 a.m. The white 2004 Dodge Ram 1500 was eastbound on Highway 191 in the inside lane. The vehicle entered a side skid, crossed the outside lane into the center median, and rolled, a news release said. Reyes, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was ejected and was pronounced deceased at the scene, the release said. Speed, and impairment are believed to be contributing factors to the crash. The next of kin has been notified. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, December 10th. Murray elected vice chairman of SBEC. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray was elected vice chairman Friday of the State Board for Educator Certification, or the SBEC, the board that oversees all aspects of the preparation, certification, and standards of conduct of public school educators. Murray was appointed by SBEC by Texas Governor Greg Abbott in March of this year. I am honored to serve on the State Board for Education Certification and grateful to have been elected vice chairman, Murray said in news release. This board influences and makes decisions on behalf of all educators across Texas, and those decisions ultimately affect the students that we serve. I'm proud to represent ECISD in this role, and I think it validates the good work our team is doing in the way of human capital, elevating the teaching profession, and operating Odessa Pathways to Teaching, ECISD's own educator preparation program. In addition to his service with SBEC, Murray is an advisory board member for the Broadband Development Office, appointed to by Post Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick in 2021. He was named the Region 18 Superintendent of the Year in 2022 and has received multiple invitations to testify before congressional committees and Texas House and Senate committees regarding such topics as teacher recruiting and retention, strategies to accelerate student learning, and technology innovation. SBEC was created by the Texas Legislature in 1995 to recognize public school educators as professionals and grant educators the authority to govern the standards of their profession. The 15 SBEC members include 11 voting members appointed by the governor to six-year terms, 4 classroom teachers, 1 counselor, 2 administrators, and 4 citizens. One of the teachers on the board is Permian High School, Dr. Robert Brescia. SBEC meets at least once per quarter through the calendar year. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, December 10th. OCA Senior jumping into next chapter. Odessa Collegiate Academy senior Marisol Martin is jumping into the next chapter of her life, feet first. Martin, 17, is graduating a semester early from OCA and moving on to University of Texas Permian Basin to study psychology with the plan of going into social work. She'll walk the stage at 10 a.m. on Saturday at the OC Sports Center with an associate degree in general studies from OC. She'll also be finished with high school, but OCA principal James Ramage said she will likely walk with her classmates in the spring. Martin will graduate early, was on her mind for a while. She had a head start in English and math because she attended UTPB STEM Academy. I kind of wanted to continue that, Martin said. She thought it was going to be a lot of work to graduate with her high school diploma and associate degree, but it wasn't as bad as she thought. Everyone's really nice and really supportive. Initially, she thought she would have a full senior year. It wasn't until the summer that I decided last minute, I'm going to take some summer classes and I'm just going to graduate in the winter. I think I decided that because I felt like it was going to be a waste of the head start that I had. I just wanted to jump into everything as soon as possible, as young as possible, Martin said. At OCA, she had been in the National Honor Society since sophomore year and was secretary this year. She also was treasurer of student council this year. She said she's nervous about going to UTPB, but she's used to being around older people because she took classes from OC. I've worked with like 40-year-olds and stuff like that, which is strange because it's like having classes with my mom, she said. Martin said her parents are really supportive of her early graduation. When I was deciding whether or not to do it, my mom said that she would support me either way. And so once I decided, she's like, okay, let's do it. And we got everything settled, Martin said. Her whole family is expected to be at Saturday's graduation. She doesn't think that the fact that she's graduating will hit her until the day of commencement. But I'm slowly starting to feel the excitement and nerves. It's going to be a lot of mixed emotions going up on that stage. But I did it, Martin said on Thursday. The This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, December 10th. Shaq talks campus threats. Prompted by threats and incidents around Ector County ISD, a parent and school health advisory council member on Friday asked police officers in attendance at a Shaq meeting in the ECISD administration building what's being done and whether students understand the impacts of their actions. As far as the threats on campus, we're talking to the students. We're educating them on what is a crime, ECISD Police Lieutenant Scott McCown said. He said everything is being done proactively and reactively. We're working with the Odessa Police Department and targeting certain campuses with high police presence in hopes to be a deterrent to those threats, McCown said. It's difficult because they don't understand the gravity of that threat. McCown said some of them are great. They're very supportive and they understand how serious these little threats are. And others, they blame law enforcement or the school district for making these rules and policies. And we have to explain to them, it's not us. We don't make the rules. We don't make the laws. The school district doesn't make the laws. This is the state of Texas, and it's a difficult battle. I'm not going to deny that, he added. Three new officers have been hired and started this week. The ECISD Board of Trustees approved funding them at a recent meeting. McCown said the new officers are undergoing field training right now, and it's hoped they'll officially start in early 2023. He added that he hoped there would be some grant money that would allow the department to hire more officers. McCown said it's also hoped that they can get some officers to teach a gang resistance education and training, GREAT, or DARE, drug abuse resistance education, to start educating elementary students like fifth or sixth graders on dangers such as tobacco use, drug use, gang membership, violence, and fighting. We would love to be able to provide that for the school district, McCown said. He added that officers are spread very thin right now. McCown said campus safety audits are being completed every week by an officer. The state also is coming in to conduct audits in the form of representatives from Region 18 Education Service Center. McCown said they let police know in advance that they're coming, but they won't say what campus they're going to. They call us and tell us we're at Bowie, for example, and we'll meet them there. We'll walk with them while they do their safety audit. If they have a question, then we respond to them. We've been pretty successful with our audit so far this year. One campus had a door that wasn't locking properly, so we had to, per state guidelines, go in and retrain every staff member on that campus, which has taken place. We've submitted that documentation back to the state, McCown said. On a separate topic, the committee discussed the Texas Youth Tobacco Survey. Bottom and Nimitz Middle Schools and Permian High School were chosen to participate in the survey, which will be conducted by Texas A&M University through the Department of Health and Human Services. They randomly picked the schools across Texas, and they're looking at 6th to 12th graders to basically get a better idea of what kids are doing with tobacco, Health Services Director Becky Rhodes said. Committee members were asked to look over the survey, see if there was anything questionable or anything they would like to add. There was discussion about adding options to the male and female on the draft survey. It was decided to look at other district surveys and see what was done and align this survey to those. Rhodes said they were looking for a sample size of about 15,000 students statewide. It was decided that any questions or revisions should be submitted to Rhodes by close of business, December 16th. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, December 10th from the obituary and death notice section. In Odessa, Jerry A. Howell, age 80, passed away Monday, December 5th in Odessa. Jerry was born October 10th, 1942 in Vowels Mill, Louisiana, to Mavis and Dewey Howell. Jerry's cowboy lifestyle of living led him to be a traveling man and living in many places. Jerry is preceded in death by his wife Bonnie, his mother and father Mavis and Dewey Howell, two brothers Doyle and Donald, and a daughter Susie Howell. He is survived by his son, Jerry Howell Cathy, and wife, Wendy of Tulia, and their daughter, Henrietta. Graveside services will be at 1 p.m. on Monday, December 12th, at China Creek Cemetery in San Saba, Texas. The family would like to thank Dr. J.B. Nadu, Dr. Ralph Sapero, Dr. Kavar Dar, and Medical Center Hospital and Focused Care at Odessa for the care given to Jerry during his final months here on Earth. In Odessa, Billy Ray McPherson, 77, of Odessa, passed away Sunday, December 4th, at his residence. He was born January 4th, 1945, in Sulphur Springs, to the late Edith and Joseph Cullen McPherson. He is preceded in death by his parents, brothers Joe Dan McPherson, Kenneth McPherson, Ronnie McPherson, and J.C. McPherson, his sister Catherine Ada McPherson Van Holten. Bill is survived by his wife of 49 years, Pat McPherson of Odessa, son Scott McPherson, son Shane McPherson, daughter Lori McPherson, brother Robert McPherson of Sulphur Springs, sisters Brenda Dane of Sulphur Springs, and Shirley Riggs of Yoakum. Bill's memorial service will be Saturday, December 10th at 2 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held on Monday, December 12th at noon at Mount Sterling Cemetery in Sulphur Springs. In Midland, Byron Roman, 62, passed away on Tuesday, December 6th. Visitation will begin at noon until 8 p.m. on Sunday, December 11th. Services will be at 3 p.m. Monday, December 12th. Both will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Byron was born on December 7th, 1959, in Guatemala City, Guatemala, to Reginaldo Roman Higueros and Maritza Cardoza Arevalo. On September 16th, 1983, he and Eliana Chavez were married. This year, they celebrated their 39th anniversary. Together, they have two beautiful children, Mildred Maritza and Byron Raul Jr. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. In Odessa, Tommy McNally Osborne, 86, died Thursday, December 8th in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 14th at Northside Baptist Church, with Pastor Clydell Chapman officiating. Burial will follow at the Odessa section of Ector County Cemetery. The family will receive friends for visitation Tuesday, December 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. In New Braunfels, Hugh Stephen Hargrove, 81, died on Saturday, December 3rd in New Braunfels. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Lux Funeral Home and Cremation Services of New Braunfels. In Odessa, newbie Juanita Johnson, 98, died on Sunday, December 4th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. December 13th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Rose Marie Radabaugh, 96, died on Sunday, December 4th in Odessa. Services will be held in private. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Charlotte Ann Smith, 81, died Sunday, November 20th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. December 10th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Pastor Mark Bristow is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Naoma Lavanda Swinney, 96, died on Tuesday, December 6th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. December 13th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Tommy McNally Osborne, 86, died on Thursday, December 8th. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 14th at Northside Baptist Church with Pastor Clydell Chapman officiating. Burial will follow at the Odessa section of Ector County Cemetery. The family will receive friends for visitation Tuesday, December 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. In New Braunfels, Hugh Stephen Hargrove, 81, died Saturday, December 3rd in New Braunfels. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Lux Funeral Home and Cremation Services of New Braunfels. In Odessa, newbie Juanita Johnson, 98, died Sunday, December 4th in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. December 13th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Rosemary Radabaugh, 96, died Sunday, December 4th in Odessa. Services will be held in private. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Charlotte Ann Smith, 81, of Odessa, died on Sunday, November 20th. Funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. December 10th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Pastor Mark Bristow is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Naoma Lavanda Swinney, 96, died on Tuesday, December 6th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. December 13th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, December 11th. Council to discuss firing Moreno Brooks by Kim Smith. Rumors about City Manager Michael Moreno, tedious hold on his job, are no longer just rumors. The Odessa City Council is scheduled to discuss firing him and Odessa City Attorney Natasha Brooks Tuesday night. The council is also scheduled to discuss appointing interim people to fill their spots and launching searches for their replacements. Moreno and Brooks did not respond to emails seeking a comment. Brooks and Moreno were evaluated along with three other council appointees in October, but the idea of reevaluating them on the council's regular meeting agenda November 22nd, but was tabled because three new members were sworn in that night. It was also on last week's workshop agenda, but due to a lack of quorum, the meeting was canceled. This week, the evaluations are back on the agenda, but the evaluations or possible termination of Brooks and Moreno also appear as separate agenda items. District 2 City Councilman Steve Thomas said he didn't know why the council was being asked to consider firing the pair. District 3 Councilman Gilbert Vasquez, District 5 Councilman Chris Haney, and at-large Councilwoman Denise Swanner did not return phone calls, texts, or emails late Friday night and Saturday. District 1 Councilman Mark Mata and District 4 Councilman Greg Cannell, who were sworn in November 22nd, declined to comment. The only thing I'm going to say about both of those agenda items is that both of those addressed by the entire council Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. at our council meeting, Mata said. Greg Connell provided a similar statement. To answer that question, I'm going to have to give you a complete statement. It is on the city council agenda for this coming Tuesday, Connell said. All of those agenda items will receive input from all the council members, interested city employees, community citizens. I'm sure we'll be there. It's going to be Tuesday at 6 p.m. Mayor Javier Hoven emailed without comment, writing only all agenda items on Tuesday's city council will be discussed at Tuesday's meeting. When the idea of reevaluation first came up, Thompson said it was his fear Joven, Mata, and Swanner wanted to fire Moreno, and he suggested other staff members were listed as window dressing. In his opinion, Moreno is well qualified for his job and will replace, and like city staff, Thompson said, he found Brooks to be a forthright person who does her job and doesn't place one side against the other. He predicts the loss of Moreno will have a negative impact on the city employees and worries assistant city manager Cindy Munchie will quit, which would be a travesty. Munchie didn't respond to the email seeking comment either. If you say municipal government accounts grow on trees, you need your head examined, Thompson said. They don't, and it's going to leave the city of Odessa potentially in a lurch, in my opinion. Thompson further predicts Jovan will become Odessa city mayor and Mata will become mayor. Asked about the mayor's position, Mata said he loves the job he has right now. Rumors are hilarious. I'm just going to say that. As of right now, I have no intention of wanting to become mayor, Mata said. That's all I can say about that. I can't speak about Mayor Hovan and his intentions, but my intentions, I'm definitely not intending on running for mayor. Nor, Mata said, is he interested in city manager's position. Other reactions. Dieter White, who opted not to run for re-election last month, along with Tom Sprawls and Mari Willis, says she has been anticipating this move for a while. Several months ago, the city council asked for the city's legal staff to strengthen game room ordinances before ultimately deciding to eliminate them entirely with an entirely new ordinance. White said since the process started, Hovan, Mata, and Swiner stopped consulting with Brooks on various issues for unknown reasons. White said she was part of the council who hired Brooks and has always felt Brooks had a good legal background and connection in the legal community. She worked hard to pursue training for others attorney in her office, White said. There's nothing that I can say that is negative about her, White said. She has always researched thoroughly and questioned any issues, either she herself or through her staff. She's always been very forthcoming and provided detailed information for us. White praised Morano. I can't say enough about him. I think he's a top-notch city manager. First of all, his relations and his ability to work with communicate well with all the departments within the city. He has a genuine respect for every position within the city of Odessa, White said. He's an intelligent man with great communication skills and has a great working relationship with outside entities, whether it's governmental or in private sector. He spent 35 years with the city, and his hands down, Michael has been the one that I've enjoyed and respected the most of the city managers I've dealt with. Morano has been respectful and accommodating to the council. She cannot understand why anyone would want to remove him, White said. If they want to replace him, and they need to replace him with a qualified candidate, someone that knows the details, that knows the issues in depth, not just the political side, White said. If this is the situation of wanting to gain more control, that's incredibly unfortunate. Sprawl said he was surprised council members were finally being explicit about their wishes. This is probably the most candid they've been. Tell us what you want to do so we can discuss it, Sprawl said. For them to say they're going to access everybody that worked for the city council was kind of silly, and really and truly is silly anyway. You're going to have Steve Thomas, who's going to side with those people, and then you're going to have three new guys that don't know anything about them. Morano is a talented man with good leadership and communication skills, said Brooks, and good to her job, Sprawl said. Others than someone wanting the job for himself, Sprawl said. I can't figure out why they'd want to get rid of him. Like Thompson. Sprawl said he's heard the rumors about Hovan and Mata stepping into the role of city manager and mayor. The mayor is not qualified to be the city manager. He didn't come up through the ranks, and it's impossible for him to know the city as intimately as Mr. Morano does. Sprawl said he's not spent enough time in the city hall working on a day-to-day problems or situations. First of all, I don't think the mayor has very good communication skills. Just last month, Sprawl said Hovan reprimanded Munchie during a packed council meeting for speaking from the front row rather than approaching the microphone, but did not do it when others later spoke to him from the back of the room. Sprawl, too, believes morale will plummet and Marcy will leave if the pair are fired. Willis also expressed her concern that the three new council members, Connell, Haney, and Vasquez, will be asked to vote on the termination when they've not had any time to work with them. I think both of them have exceptional work performance records, Willis said. Their work was very, very good. I would have no complaints toward their work and their work ethics, production or leadership skills, and their various capacities. I'm just surprised that they're at this point. It's too bad the situation is being handled in this way, Willis said. We're still dealing with human beings who have families, who have responsibilities to carry out, as though there's just a number on a piece of paper. That, to me, is very unfortunate, Willis said. City employees will also suffer, she said. I think it's going to affect the city employee morale because they don't know who's next and how it's going to come about, especially if there's not a lot to justify those actions, Wilson said. OFR raises. In other matters, the council is scheduled to discuss using American Rescue Plan Act money to boost salaries of public safety employees. The City Council voted in July to hire a firm to conduct an employee compensation study for Odessa Fire Rescue employees. Announce has lost more than 70 employees over the last 2 years. Attempts to immediately give raise for OFR employees since July have failed because White, Wilson, Sprawls, and Thompson's wanted to wait for the study to be complete. With White, Wallace, and Sprawls gone, the council may not have to vote to move forward. Connell said he doesn't know how he will vote, but noted Morano and Munchie asked the federal government for clarification on what he described as fuzzy rules on ARPA funding expenditures. Mata said the city council cannot afford to wait on raises due to the continuing loss of firefighters and increasing number of traffic accidents and other growth-related calls from the service. In my opinion, that the compensation study was done in such a way to take the focus off what was most important, which was OFR, Mata said. Since 2018, OFR has lost 140 firefighters. That's a huge problem that we're having, and one of the main reasons that they're leaving is because of compensation. Mata said the council will also be looking at potential raises for dispatchers and police officers. He hopes morale won't become an issue if other city employees don't receive raises. All city employees have to use their OFR, and we want to make sure that the OFR is capable of answering all those calls, not just the city employees, but the other citizens of Odessa, Mata said. So if we are hurt feelings, I would hope that there will be some consolation in that. Hey, we're trying to fix the problem so that whatever you have an emergency, you can call on OFR and the response time is adequate enough because we have a fully staffed fire department. Work sessions. The council will also discuss changing the days and meeting times of their work sessions. Instead of gathering at 3 p.m. Tuesdays, exactly 1 week prior to city council meeting, the council is considering holding workshops immediately prior to its normal 6 p.m. meeting. I'm in favor of having the work sessions on the same Tuesday as the council meeting. Having it 2 hours before says at 4 o'clock. Have it from 4 to 5:30, taking a brief recess and start the council meeting, Mata said. The council has a lot of people now that aren't retired. They have a full-time job, and it would make it easier for them to be more effective.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.